We have a wonderful speaker with us today, and it's just my joy to have her today. I had her as a beautiful house guest last night, and what a joy. What a joy it is to be with this lovely consciousness around. So I would just, many of you know Reverend Savannah Noel, and she's been with us many times, and it's always a joy to have her. And for those that don't know her, she's a speaker, teacher, and a relationship coach. She started her spiritual path at this tender age at 16 and very active at it, too. She traveled worldwide to Egypt, Ukraine, teaching science of mind there over a span of 11 years. Imagine that. Just amazing. And, of course, her love is to support people in their discovery of a healthy, connected, conscious, intimate relationships and worthiness. What a beautiful goal to have, and she does it beautifully. Let me introduce Reverend Savannah Noel.
Thank you. Good morning. Last time I was here, I didn't see a crowd this big. It's amazing. So I want to take you all in for a moment. Let us take a deep breath together. Inhale. And an exhale. I love this community so much. These days, because of the shift of COVID and the hybrid thing, I don't get to do this as much anymore. And so when I do, I'm just really grateful, and I'm grateful that Reverend Tamara is taking a break right now on the beaches of Mexico. And I think it's always funny when you're starting to write a sermon, a talk, and you're given a theme. The theme for this month has been divine discomfort. And I'm like, well, I could talk about that for a while. And as I was writing it, I felt a little discomfort. The topic today is called Discomfort is the Least of Our Concerns. And what I want to talk about today has more to do with resilience. What do we do in the midst of that discomfort? How do we build resilience? The power of showing up. You know, Tamara talked in the last few weeks about lessons of uncomfortability, which is that even a word? It is now. It is now. No, I was like, I have a hard time saying it. Yeah. And then we talked about how where our comfort ends is where transformation begins. And then last week there was a talk about, and I love this line because it's been one of the, I would say, key things in my life that I've always looked to when I'm going through hard times, which is that the pain pushes until the vision pulls. It's like there's a vision that has been placed on your life. Maybe it was from a long, long time ago, and sometimes it takes us a while to get there because the pain is pushing us to go down that path to become into alignment with it, right? And so I was thinking about the last 4 years and how we have been put in this really interesting space of questioning our boundaries and our identities. It's like those things were taken from us. Those things were kind of stripped away from us during the pandemic. And then how the cost of what I would call ambiguous loss was so great that our brains couldn't even comprehend what was going on. Like, who am I? What am I doing? And it triggered what I have been experiencing, and I'm sure many of you relate, to a prolonged uncertainty. It's like, it isn't that we just aren't sure that the pandemic's going to end, but we aren't sure about not being sure. It keeps coming and then going. And then 1 minute it's gone, and then it comes back again. And it's this notion that we experienced of a collapse of boundaries. And so I think to myself, and you might think, well, the roles and the identities that you've had of, you know, I'm a therapist, I'm a podcaster, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a supervisor, and I haven't even left my chair in my sweatpants in front of the Zoom screen. And so you can see that many people, because of the situation, were asking questions like, where's morning? Where's night? Where does the day begin? Where does it end? Is this making sense to all of you? We are physical people. we are spatially oriented. And then you think on top of that, we have rituals of how we participate in community. We have rituals of how we leave the house. We put on different clothing when we go to the gym or we play tennis. We put on different clothing when we go out to dinner, right? Or go to a concert. All of that was stripped from us. We lost, I think, our spontaneity. We lost our sporting events and our plans and our parties and our celebrations. And then for many of us, there was this death of course, what was, but the physical death of so many people. I had, I think, 6 people pass in a span of 2 years. And it's like, how much can we really hold? How do we make sense of it? And then there's this languishing where you aren't depressed, but things feel lifeless. Anyone relate? It's what we call liminality. Have you heard this term before? The liminal space. It's how these unknowns, I feel, have like filtered themselves into our relationships. And you can see that so many relationships fell apart during COVID, didn't they? You pair all of that with the ambiguity of life and loss and all the discomfort that comes with it, and you're like, where is purpose and meaning? Where is joy? Where is all of that? And so the question I pose to us today, because now we're here. We're here, and maybe it's uncertain in your life right now, but how are you showing up to life? What I want to share today is vulnerable, just because I feel that's one of the ways that I most grow, but it's also one of the ways I relate, is through vulnerability. And I have to say that about a month ago, I had to give myself a pep talk. Anyone have to do that? Or call a friend to give you a pep talk, asking, what is this all for? How am I called to serve? Why am I here? You know, all of the really big existential questions that we say at 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. You know, community is changing, and how we're relating to the world is so different right now. It's begging us to rethink, I think, especially within this philosophy, the me, mine, individualistic concepts of God and our ability to affect consciousness. We know that consciousness is cause. We say this in our teaching all the time. And we know that the power of the mind affects condition, right? It affects the outcome. But I want to pose for a moment that it's consciousness is cause plus. It feels like I want to explore this. And what I mean by this is that there are things in the world that I feel are acausal. We don't know why they happen. They're out of our control. And the way that we've come to understand cause and effect is by the power of our own consciousness and thought, right? We think that the power of positive thinking, but we know that it's not the power of positive thinking alone that shifts consciousness. The way that we have viewed God is this operational way in our lives from cause and effect, but I think it's more. And Dr. Jim Lockhart, he's a minister within this teaching, and he wrote this really incredible 5-part blog about New Thought and us shifting our understanding of God and broadening the concept to include myth, to include quantum physics, because, you know, scientists are now finding very amazing things about quantum physics that proves everything we've been teaching forever. And the notion that some things may appear to be acausal. Like, they happen without cause, and so it helps us to understand, well, why do difficult and hard things happen to the best people, or to people, right? And I don't want to make this whole sermon about quantum physics. I did study it in school, and it was really over my head, but it was really, really fascinating. But if you want to know more about this blog, let me know after, and I'll give you Jim Lockhart's newsletter. But what I'm suggesting is that the very act of showing up to life supposes that there is an opposite of not showing up to life. To show up to life means that there is a reason and a purpose and a meaning in the showing up. Otherwise, we would be complacent, we would be probably lost, we would be stagnant, and death would result. And because of the nature of life, the curveballs, the twists, the turns, the ups, downs, losses, the re-identifications with who we are and what the next phase is about, the very act of showing up requires courage and resilience. It takes willingness, and it takes a willingness to sit in discomfort and seeming paradox of light and dark. Can I allow more into my life? Can I take up more space? You know, for some of us, we want to engage in the thing we're doing because we want a certain outcome, right? We think that the outcome is going to determine success or value or lovability or worthiness or meaning. But what I'm finding is that as long as those questions are future-oriented, we're not living in the now. And we're not showing up to exactly what is in front of us. I think a lot of us are probably really good at running from it, from what we don't want to see. But the outcome doesn't determine those things. The outcome is just more information on the path. But I want certainty, don't you? I don't want to sit anymore in the unknown. I know unknown really well. I want to know what's next. I want things to be easy and figured out, but they aren't. Yet. And I think about my life and how the last few years have been pretty intense, pretty hard. And we want to become more aligned with our purpose and our power and leap and step into our passions and finally say no to the job that we don't want to be in anymore, that isn't aligned. Or we want to say no to that friend of yours who overshares and you don't know how to set a boundary with them. We want to finally say no to the unavailable person and have that hard conversation with someone that we're afraid to have. We want to finally say no because we mean no, and we want to pursue the dream and have the path figured out for the plan for the future, and we want to know that it's going to work out in a certain way. I do. We want to know that when we take the leap, the net's going to appear, that when I jump off that plane, the parachute is going to open, right? And what I'm finding, here's the thing, is that you don't get the net without the courageous leap. And it's through the act of bravery and becoming something that you've never been that actually creates the outcome. And this is what it means to, when we talk about the kingdoms of consciousness, are you all familiar-ish with it? So there's four kingdoms of consciousness. When we come onto the spiritual path, usually we come on it like we washed up onto the shores of one of these spiritual teachings, or you were just finding something new about yourself. And usually when we come into Kingdom One consciousness, it's about looking at the world through the lens of how everything is happening to me. Some would call it victim consciousness. And then as we evolve on the spiritual path, we start moving into another phase, which is Kingdom Two consciousness, which is, oh my gosh, I can see that the law of cause and effect actually works in my life, and it's not happening to me, it's actually happening by me. That's where we have people who manifest parking spaces and, what is that, princes, palaces and parking spaces, where you're like, I am a manifester, and things are coming into my life. But there's this space that I don't feel we embody and integrate deep enough, which is the third and fourth step, which is the kingdom of where life moves through us and as us, where we get so in touch and integrated with our yes, our no, that we're able to speak from an integrated embodied space, not from a I made this happen space, but from a surrendered space. Do you understand the difference? And so this is what it means, that whole, you know, expecting the net to appear. This is what it means when we are on the spiritual path, sitting in discomfort, and we want to take the leap. We have to take the leap and then trust that the thing is going to appear. And that is where we look at the through me and as me steps. So it's the evidence of yourself becoming something that you've never been, which is what you're actually looking for. For me, it's shown up, and for you, maybe it shows up as what I call a gap space. And I don't know where I'm going, and I don't have a map, and it kind of gets a little dark in there, you know? And I don't know where the net is. I don't even know what the net is. So then you ask questions like, wait, can I trust myself to come fully to the edge? Can I do something and say something differently in this situation? Can I trust my own wisdom and my own intuition with this new skill that I'm being asked to cultivate? Can I trust myself to be adventurous and curious in the face of whatever I'm being presented with? And so if you couple these questions with humility and a willingness to get trusted feedback from people who love you and care about you most, and they want more for you, then you will start to take the next step and the aligned steps. And then life starts to alter around your alignment. And I call it aligned trust. So it's looking at the world through curiosity. Instead of seeking from having to have the answer, we ask better questions like, what is possible? How am I wanting to show up in these areas of my life? So instead of seeking certainty, we start asking better questions, building the foundation of that inner trust and knowing. You know, last August, I was asked to be a keynote speaker at our Big Sky Retreat conference. It's a New Thought conference in Big Sky, Montana. And I was asked 9 months before. So I had 9 months to prepare this presentation. And it was the biggest keynote I had ever done. And it was, I want to say, maybe 150 people. And they asked me to present a talk for an hour and 45 minutes. I know. But that wasn't it. They also asked me to do a 45-minute panel presentation and another, how long was it? And another hour talk throughout the whole week. I had my work cut out for me. And I thought to myself, I'm a teacher as well. And I thought, I'm not going to keep a crowd for an hour and 45 minutes listening to me, nor would I want to listen to somebody for an hour and 45 minutes. So this is going to have to be a workshop. This is going to have to be some sort of interactive thing. And it's fascinating because usually these things come fairly quickly when I sit down and write, but nothing came for months and months. And we get to the event, and I realize that I have 8 pages of notes. And I'm standing there in front of this crowd, and I have to say, it was probably, I've spoken to a lot of crowds all over the place for the last 20 years, and it was the most vulnerable talk I think I've ever given. Number one, I've never done it for an hour and 45 minutes at this capacity, but it was deeper than that. It was because what I was going to share, I knew, was my own personal experience with a new thought as up to this date, and I had the feeling that I might be criticized or judged for what I was going to say, because I knew that I wasn't going to paint a picture of rainbows and butterflies. I knew that what I had to talk about was a lot of discomfort. It wasn't just personal discomfort. It was about what I sensed was happening organizationally and what we're here to do about it. But I knew that it was not going to be popular opinion, and so for days and days, I thought, I was so anxious. I thought, I can't do this. I'm sitting in my hotel room talking myself into this, which has never happened, and I'm never really all that nervous when I get on stage like I was here. So I did that thing that I said earlier where we give ourselves a pep talk, but I called Mom because Mom somehow always knows what to say. She's also a minister in this teaching, so she has a pretty good idea what I'm, you know, working in. And she said, Savannah, if you can just show up and just do your thing. If you touch one person in that audience, then you did your job. And I'm like, yeah, but they paid me a lot of money to do this. And I left the conversation and all of this doubt came in. I had all of this imposter syndrome. What if I make people angry? What if they think I've disparaged the whole organization? What if this doesn't land? And that was the biggest fear of what if this doesn't land with anyone? What are they going to think? But what if it does? What if it's the thing that has to be said? And then I started going to the main room and thought to myself, well, why am I the one doing this keynote? You see how we start then fighting for our limitations? Like, well, why did they choose me? Well, why am I supposed to deliver this message? They could have chosen someone else, you know? And I just led with showing up and sat in my own vulnerable discomfort. And I'm telling you, I got up there. I opened it with a song because I love to sing. And Gary Lynn Floyd, who's one of my favorite artists, played. And everyone just dropped in. It was like you could feel the room just go. And I did the whole thing. And what transpired totally blew my mind. People were showing up in ways I could not have planned. They were in tears. They were crying. I asked them questions. The question I asked them at the end was, what is the dream that's in your heart that you are afraid of sabotaging? And the place that people were sharing from was from one of the most vulnerable, deepest places. And I did not see that coming because I was in my own mess of my own limiting beliefs. And they were stating their dreams out loud to everyone in this room, like publicly standing up and saying, this is what I'm afraid of, and telling me how much they could relate to my story. It was so powerful. I don't even think I realized how powerful it was until it all ended. But the thing is that I showed up with no attachments because at that point I was already thinking I was gonna, you know, fail anyways. I was like, well, there's no ego here. There's no attachments. I'm just gonna show up and deliver the message. And so if you take anything from this talk this morning, I hope it's that. We all have excuses. I'm tired. Show up anyway. It's not perfect. Show up anyway. I'm not sure people are going to like what I have to say. Show up anyway. You're not doing it for people to like it. Think about that for a minute. You're not doing it for people to like it. Reverend David Ault, a mentor of mine, told me years ago, he said, Savannah, you're here to give your gifts away. And how they land is not your responsibility. I thought, man, there's so much great detachment in that, right? They are meant to be given away, and we're doing it to transform ourselves and also to allow other people the gift of transforming themselves, because we don't know how showing up in our mess is going to provide a gift to someone else, right? The most powerful talks that I ever have given, I realized, were the most vulnerable, but they were also the ones I was most afraid to give. That thing that you're scared to do, you probably need to do it. Because, you know, I was told at ministerial school, when you get up here, you're not going to bleed all over your congregation. That's not the point. We want to make sure we've worked through some of our stuff before are sharing it. But it means that we speak from the truest place that we know and that we can. You might say, well, life is hard. Show up anyway. I'm afraid. Show up anyway. I don't know how to do it. Show up anyway. I'm going to do this differently. And normally I would run from it, but this time I'm going to show up anyway. Yes. Brené Brown says this so well. You've probably heard this. She talks about the quote from Theodore Roosevelt. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, and he strives valiantly, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly. I get chills when I think of that. One of the coolest experiences of that entire week for me, other than the obvious of what I shared, was that at the end of that hour and 45-minute presentation, there was a lady standing in the back, and what I didn't know about her, I learned later, is that she was probably in her mid-70s and a former Olympian, and she had done some pretty incredible athletic things in her life. And I asked the question, what is the dream that you've been afraid of pursuing, or what is the calling on your heart? And she took the microphone, and she said, well, my whole life, I've wanted to be a public speaker, and I've wanted to do what you do. And she said, but I've just felt like maybe I didn't have anything to say. And I remember, you know how you just get those little intuitive hits, like, I do this thing, but you're like, but that's out of protocol, but I'm not asking for permission. So I got this hit. The minute she said it, I broke protocol, and I just stepped and walked down the aisle to the back of the room, and I said, come on. And I grabbed her, and everyone in the audience went nuts, and she just looked at me mortified. What are you doing to me? But it was such a cool moment, because something in me said, do it, pulled her up on the stage, and I stood by her, and I had my hand on her back, and I said, I'm not leaving, because I could tell she was like, her knees were like shaking. I'm not leaving. I'm right here. You have the microphone, and you have this whole audience. What is it that you want to say? And it was just so beautiful. And slowly, I started moving away so that she had her moment. And what came out of her mouth was beautiful. She owned it. And then at the end, everyone stood up and clapped for her and gave her a standing ovation. And I ran into her afterwards and a few other people, and they said, you know, Savannah, she will never forget that moment. Have you had those moments? I mean, I know I have those pivotal moments where she just showed up in the moment. But sometimes in the showing up, there's ambivalence. There's resistance, right? I had so much resistance before that talk. Like, I don't know if I meant to do this. And the last piece here that I want to share with you has to do with building resilience when faced with discomfort, but also our ambivalence. When we allow dynamics and relationships to exist that are not in integrity with what it is that we want, we're saying that we can't get what we want. So in my own life, I've seen how this shows up in romantic relationships. It can show up in your partnerships, in your co-working spaces. It can show up in every area of your life. And if you tolerate people who are unsure, unavailable, uncertain about you, wishy-washy, then you are unsure, unavailable, and uncertain about yourself. Think about that. If you entertain business contracts with people that are unclear, they're not aligned with what it is that you truly want, they are vague, then you are unclear, not aligned with what you truly want. It's the same with any form of relationship. So if you think about ambivalence, where in your life are you unsure and ambivalent? If you're wishy-washy about your passions and your purpose, then on some level, we don't trust our choice. We don't trust that we can have it or that we deserve it. Because if we don't trust our ability to say no to the thing that isn't for us, how can we trust ourselves to have a fully embodied yes? Like fully embodied. Because if you can't trust yourself to say no to that thing, then how big is that yes? If you tolerate ambivalence, then you're complicit in the ambivalence. And I decided a while ago, I'm still working with it, y'all, that I don't want to tolerate ambivalence anymore. I don't want to have porous boundaries. We know what porous boundaries are. You say yes when you mean no. Do you have your own back when you're facing ambivalence? Do you trust your no when you don't feel aligned with something? Because your yes to anything has to show up from an embodied place. And I think a lot of us are willing to compromise ourselves. People pleasing, anyone in the room? Yeah, no? Taking the lower paying job that you know that you deserve more. Listening to what other people think instead of trusting your own inner guidance. Here's an example of that. I know for years in my life, I had so many people telling me, Savannah, I think you're meant to do X. You're meant to do this. You're meant to be a minister in this capacity. And I didn't compromise my no. My no was very clear that this is not what I want to do. There was no ambivalence about it. So that when that yes shows up, then you fully know it. You spot it. You're like, I'm so clear on my no's of what I don't want, that when that thing is that I do want, that is a full embodied yes, then you know it, you feel it, you sense it. All right, so I think I'm getting up to time here, so I'm gonna wrap. Because I have so much material, it's ridiculous. The last thing I want to say is that I've been reading this book right now called Wintering. Have any of you heard of it? It's called Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. And what I love about this book is that it invites the reader into the cyclical nature of life, that it isn't linear, that there are times of great productivity and praise and movement and harvest, and then there are also times of fallow, quiet, inward, reflective, fertile times, that soil, you know, of darkness, where we're resting and listening, most especially when life knocks us down. We see this, I think, in our organizations. We see this in the political scene. We see it in nature. We see it with animals, of course, in hibernation. And of course, farmers understand it. They know this. And culturally, I think what this book is really teaching me is that I think we have trouble making room for fallow times, for the uncomfortable, for the times of retreat and silence. Can we still show up in those times? Maybe in those times we are more the observer and the witness than we are the doer and the talker. Showing up means being in the arena of your life. It means vulnerability. It means moving beyond your comfort zone to who you thought that you were. There is a saying in the yoga community, anyone like yoga, where showing up to your mat is half the battle. So just get on the mat. Just get on the mat. Just get out of bed. Just show up to your day and intend the kind of day that you want to have. Go to sleep with thoughts of what went well that day. Anyone have a gratitude practice? Do that. Yeah. Take the baby step. Take that one step and ask the universe, which is what I've been doing, what is my next right and intended step for my becoming? If you didn't start the book, start the book. Start writing. If you haven't called the agent, call the agent. Or just make your cup of tea and cup of coffee. Call a friend. Take a deep breath. Be present. You know, for me, it's about just showing up to the next thing in the day. Because I don't fully know how it's going to all in picture yet. And you know, spirit knows. Life knows. God knows. Universe knows. So I want to close with this question for you of, can you show up to the things that you're most committed to? And maybe it's you committing hour by hour to doing this thing here and completing it and making it beautiful. And that is where we begin. Because showing up means that we're touching the parts of ourselves that we may not have known were possible, because we're leaping, as I said, into the unknown, into something more. And what's on the other side of that is actually not our business. So we walk the path and we claim our good. And if you don't know how to claim your good, have someone else claim it for you. We claim our abundance. We claim our truth. We claim the realest and truest thing that we can. It's that walk by faith, not by anyone? Sight. Walk by faith, not by sight. Woody Allen said, 80% of success is showing up. What will be your choice? Let us go into a closing prayer now. Just allow yourself to take a moment to become still. Just taking a deep cleansing breath. Giving gratitude for the gems, the words, the insights you might have had during the last hour or so. You might even put your hand over your heart, just connecting to yourself. Recognizing and remembering that right where we are is the power and the presence of life, this infinite intelligence that I call God, energy, love. It is the greatest love that will ever be. And that love and that power and that joy and that beauty lives and breathes and moves through each and every one of us right here in this very room and right in on our Zoom page. This power and this presence is informing and guiding and uplifting us in every way. And so we just lean into recognizing and remembering our oneness with all of life. If there's anything else we remember today, it is that we are always connected to this source. And that we are always creating from it. That we take the next right intended step and we show up fully and wholeheartedly to the thing that we desire and think about most, that is the most aligned to our highest and best. And so I'm knowing this for each and every one of us, that wherever there may be fear or doubts or limiting beliefs, worry, scarcity thinking, we let those things go right now. And we turn our attention back to possibility, to the spaciousness of that inner knower that knows what is the next and right perfect thing that is coming, that is our becoming. And so I bless this community. I bless all of the people here, all the volunteers, everyone that makes this amazing community possible. I bless each and every one of us here, knowing that we were all and are all here by divine right action, that there is no accident with the conglomeration of all who is present here. And so with that, I release this into the activation of love itself. I know all is truly well. Together, let us say, Ashe, Namaste.